Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Gary Parrish. Welcome to the CBS Sports Ion College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, honor Brandon Davies. It's late. Smash that like button. And if you haven't yet subscribed to the CBS Sports Ion College Basketball Podcast, please also do that wherever you listen to podcasts like Apple and Spotify. Let's get into it. The first round of the 2026 NBA draft, it is in the books. It happened tonight at Barclays Center. 30 picks were made. Some of them were obvious. Some of them were questionable. Norlander, we've been talking on camera for roughly 6 hours. So yes. You know what? Let's do it. Let's do it a little bit more. Dive in however you like with your thoughts on what we just watched.
Yeah, let's just riff and go with this, GP. We really just did 6 straight hours on camera. Why not just talk a little bit more about this draft? In all honesty, as we dive into this, we know a lot of you are going to be taking this in either on YouTube or in audio form early on Wednesday morning with whatever you're doing. We are all too happy to have this podcast ready and loaded for you. Give us our reactions, intel, perspective, and all that good stuff. And to anyone that's watching or taking this in now that took in the CBS Sports HQ show, we really appreciate you that also streamed live on YouTube. Really happy with the product we put out there. Shouts to Keem Dermish, Chris Williamson, of course. Adam Finkelstein, who did a wonderful job, and our incredible crew here in the Stanford studios. GP and I are in the same building. We're on different floors, getting us both in front of the same camera lens with mics might have been too much to handle at 1 a.m. Eastern, so we're going to roll and rock like this. Picks 1 through 8 were completely devoid of surprise or drama, GP. It went the way that was considered the most likely way for it to go. It goes to Bonsa, and then it goes Peterson, and then it goes Boozer, and then it goes Wilson, and then it goes Wogler, and then it goes Brown, and then it goes Acuff, and then it goes Flemings. That was the order that was considered to be just the most widely predicted and speculated on. We had a surprise at 9. We'll get to that eventually. I wanted a curveball. I wanted some team to kind of step out of what was expectation. We didn't get it. I feel like, you know, half the time we do get at least one or two of these notable ones in the top 10. We got one. And again, we'll get to the Dallas pick at number 9 in just a second here. But real quick, you know, fire off thoughts on the big boys here. Washington goes with DeBonsa. I checked in with his father twice on Tuesday, and he's going number one. I know he's going one. He did not outright directly tell me. Washington has told us we're going number one, but I think they had, you know, got enough signals to believe that that's what was going to happen. And it's just incredible that, and I detail this in the feature I wrote on him, but they set off on a very intentional, specific path over the course of essentially 4 years to get him to this night. And there were many ways that his journey could have been sidetracked and sidetracked even to the level of like, oh, you became the number 6 pick or the number 11 pick instead of the number 1 pick. It just, everything went pretty much the way they wanted to, save for the fact that he didn't win an NCAA tournament game. Everything else led Division I in scoring, was obviously the super high-profile prospect, carved their own path to BYU, highest-rated recruit there ever, the first BYU player to go number one. And so there's all that element to it there. So no huge surprise there. I'm fascinated to see if he can truly step in and by the end of his rookie year deal, year 4, be one of the 10 most prominent players in the league. Can he be a someone that can lead the NBA in scoring by the time he's 24 years old? So I'll toss it back to you on the DeBonsa stuff, and then we don't have to go through every single pick, but obviously we'll talk some of the biggest names there. But just your grand takeaways on AJ to the district here.
It's the, I think, smart move in the moment. Whether it ends up being the right pick, as always, we'll see. But this is who I would have selected first. I think it's who most people would have selected first. He seems to be, as I've said many times in previous weeks, he seems to be the best combination available in this draft of high upside, high floor. Like, could absolutely become one of the, you know, 5 to 10 best players in the world. But even if he doesn't, he's going to be really good. He's a basketball player. I would have taken a serious look at Darren Peterson, Cam Boozer, maybe even Caleb Wilson, a couple of others as well. Do your due diligence. But this is where I would have landed. And I don't only expect to see A.J. DeBonta playing for the Washington Wizards next season. I won't be surprised if that team goes from a bad team that was picking first in the draft to the postseason. Whether that means actual playoffs or play-in, we'll see. But they seem to have some interesting pieces there now where I don't think DeBonta is going to be a part of some crazy rebuild. They should win enough next season to play meaningful games, at the very least, as the regular season unfolds.
Yeah, and on the one other additional element that had kind of been brought up to me was the fact when they signed this Trae Young deal, this 4-year deal, it just seemed to tip the hand that they were not going to have Darren Peterson, a very ball-dominant lead guard, team up with Trae Young and try and make that work. You know, DeBonta is going to fit in as the three, doesn't need the ball in his hands at all times, you know, for 10 seconds every possession to make the magic happen there. He's a very, very good teammate. A willing and wanting passer. It all made a ton of sense there. Congrats to him and their journey as it begins in D.C. Ironically enough, of course, Utah had the number 2 pick. Utah knew DeBonta better than anyone, and DeBonta knew Utah better than anyone, but it will be Darren Peterson that goes there. And we're all just going to sit back and wait and see what develops. I'm not even talking like summer league. We'll see what happens in summer league, but summer league doesn't really matter. It's when they get to next season, bringing Peterson in, they opt not to go Boozer there. They've got so much there in the front court. There are obvious reasons why you would take Peterson there. And so now we just wait and see, you know, X number of years down the road, was Peterson at 2 the logical choice? Is he going to live up to that? Or might we have a case where we get down there and actually it was players that went 3rd and 4th and or somewhere after that? I don't know. But I'm ready to finally just, and it's, I say finally, it's still going to take many more months before we get to see it. I just want to see this dude in a new environment, whatever he can do. Given the nature of our jobs, we intake, particularly me more than you because of where you work, way, way, way more college basketball than NBA. But with this draft class and having tracked it so long, GP, I will make it a point to seek these guys out that were drafted high. They're going to get plenty of minutes that are going to be in starting lineups. And I just want to see what Darren Peterson can do with a full-on reboot. And I guess if you want to credit Utah and the Angels for not wavering off of this, quite clearly, they had at worst Peterson 2 on their board. Maybe they had him 1 privately. I doubt that. But regardless, they stick with that and they don't take the chance on a prospect that just seems like a sure bet in Boozer, who obviously went 3.
Well, the Utah Jazz account tweeted something along the lines, I believe, of like, we got our guy. You know, the implication being we got our guy, the one we wanted at number 2, the one we would have wanted even if we were picking first. Whether that's true or not, you know, who knows. But I will say, because I'm a little bit like you, I'm kind of tired of talking about Darren Peterson and cramping and the Arizona game. I feel like I've told all of these stories 50,000 times in 50,000 places. I'm ready to see him in a new environment too and just like start fresh, hit reset. How about this? We'll never bring up the cramping again if it never happens again. So let's just see where we're at with all of this stuff. We'll never bring out the tapping out of games again if you don't tap out of games again. Let's start fresh here. I will tell you one encouraging thing, because I know he's a polarizing prospect at the tip top of this draft. I think an encouraging thing for me would be that Utah did this. The Angels are good at this. They know what they're doing. Cameron Boozer is a safe, big swing. Like, everybody loves him. His father works in Salt Lake City for the Jazz. They were willing to pass on all of that to, quote, gamble on Darren Peterson, which makes me think that they don't believe it's actually as much of a gamble as, you know, some others have suggested. It makes me think that what they believe is they are getting, at the very least, the second best player in this draft and maybe really the first, if the stuff that was problems at Kansas just aren't problems anymore.
I send it right back to you on Boozer at 3. You got a cute little anecdote about what happened when Peterson went 2 and then what subsequently happened, obviously, when Boozer got picked to go to Memphis.
So the Grizzlies had a watch party at FedEx Forum because fans are excited and frankly need something to be excited about. So people showed up and, you know, they're all watching this on TV. And when Darren Peterson got drafted by the Utah Jazz, the crowd at FedEx Forum erupted in applause, which is just kind of, it's just funny. It's just a funny thing that happened. It could be a clip that people go back to and mock someday if Peterson becomes, you know, a top 3 player in the world, which based on his talent is certainly possible. But that franchise in Memphis, the star player, everybody's favorite player. I mean, I don't know that there's a kid in Memphis that doesn't either have a Ja Morant poster in their room or Ja shoes on their feet or a Ja jersey. Like, my kids have all of those things that I've just said. And there was a time, and I've told you this, like, where the Grizzlies were headed for what the Spurs and Thunder are doing right now. And that's not my opinion. ESPN did future power rankings 2 years in a row and labeled the Grizzlies the best future in the NBA 2 years in a row. That was with the young core of Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson, and Desmond Bane, all 23 or younger. Obviously, it went off the rails. Ja's off-the-court problems with his unavailability has been just the biggest factor of that franchise going from what looked like a great place to a not-so-great place. They ultimately decide they have to move on. They trade Desmond Bane first, then Jaren Jackson. They're trying to move Ja now. It's harder than I think some Ja's biggest fans expected. There's not really a market for him right now. He's a very expensive basketball player with what looks like a declining ability and some obvious off-the-court stuff that has popped up in times at least. And so the fans need a star, but they also need somebody that just – I don't even know how to say this without it saying it like it sounds like I'm piling on Ja Morant, which I don't mean to do. But you need somebody you don't have to worry about. You know, you talk to anybody about Cameron Boozer, and he is just as awesome off the court as he is on the court. A serious young man in every aspect of life, somebody that you can actually build around and feel like if he's dragging people anywhere, it's in the right direction. I don't know when the jersey is going to hit the team store. I imagine it'll be very quick and they'll sell out very quickly. I expect, and my sons have been, my young guys have been, you know, waiting for this and talking about this. We've had like real fun conversations, the type of conversation you can have with a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old, but you have them about this draft and who the Grizzlies might get. And they wanted this. They were excited about this. And the franchise is fired up right now. To add Cameron Boozer is a real big deal. I don't think I got you. And let's see if you, Mike's popped.
Mike better.
It's working now.
There we go. There was some noise behind this door. So I muted while you were going just to make sure it didn't bleed over. And thank you. I appreciate that. I've said this in years past on this draft recap show, but just bears repeating. Like, I think one of the most underappreciated things just from the general sports public is like how hard it is just to be good in the NBA and how absurdly difficult it is to be like consistently great. So with that being said, with all these absurd talents that went here, we just don't know who's going to hit, who's not. I will just be genuinely surprised if Cameron Boozer is not a reliable double-double guy way more years than not and doesn't bring some buoy of optimism and consistency to that franchise. So that's really, really cool. And then, you know, GP literally works for the Grizzlies, got an awesome human being in the building there. Last pick that we'll, you know, at the top that we'll just dive into is obviously Caleb Wilson, who goes forward to the Bulls. No surprise there. I got a little bit of pushback. I said this on the show and then it gets tweeted out. I basically said that Derrick Rose and now Wilson are really the only two picks that since Jordan retired that, you know, give that fan base reason to believe that there's real relevancy, can be real superstars. There were some Elton Brand stands in my mentions. Some Joakim Noah. I was there. Like, Noah was a nice pick. It was not on this level. Caleb Wilson has the potential to maybe... There is a scenario, there is a universe in which he actually winds up as the best player in this draft class. And good on the Bulls. You know, between the Bulls and the Wizards, who are obviously connected by multiple Michael Jordan retirements there, they just haven't had many opportunities to bring in someone, to draft someone that it's like, ah, here's the guy that we can actually build around and here's why it can happen. So that was a big win for them. And we didn't get to see Wilson play in the NCAA tournament. You know, DeBonta was a one and done. Peterson was a two and through. And even then in that game against St. John's, Boozer gets hurt. They get knocked out of the Elite Eight, but at least they were on the big stage. They were available. Caleb Wilson was not. Caleb Wilson's lack of availability is why the guy who was sitting there with him in the green room tonight is no longer coaching at North Carolina and Hubert Davis. The draft is here. I'm so eager to see these guys play in a real NBA game. And we got to wait many, many months there, but good on him. Everyone knew, even though the draft 1-8 went as expected, the lock of all locks was Wilson to the Bulls at 4.
So the top four went exactly in the order most people projected. The top eight were the same as the top eight in my mock draft. And let me be clear, I don't think that's worthy of a pat on the back. I think a lot of people probably had the first eight correct in this one. If you missed it, it's the top four. We've gone through that. Keaton Wagler, 5 to the Clippers. Mychal Brown Jr., 6 to the Nets. Darius Acuff Jr., 7 to the Kings. Kingston Flemings, 8 to the Hawks. And then at number 9 is when we got our first real twist in this draft relative to the things most people were talking about heading into it. That was Morez Johnson to the Dallas Mavericks to play for his former coach at Michigan, Dusty May. We'll dive into that next. First, Josh, let's get a word from our partners. So the first oh wow moment of the first round of the 2026 NBA draft, I think, came at number 9 when the card was turned in and Dallas Mavericks selected Mo Johnson out of Michigan with the pick. He now will pair with Dusty May in Dallas. We joked about it on HQ. Can you imagine? I know this isn't a conversation that happened, but like, just imagine if there was somebody there from the future and they said, all right, Dusty May, this is Morez Johnson. Morez Johnson, this is Dusty May. You going to play for him? All right, here's the plan. Play for him in 1 year. You guys will win a national championship in April. Then he'll get the Mavericks job in June. And then, like, I don't know, day after that, you can be a top 10 pick and go play with him there too. How's that sound? It's just a crazy story, the way all of this unfolded. Keep in mind, nobody a year ago would have thought Dusty May is going to be in the NBA on June 23rd, 2026. Similarly, nobody would have thought Morez Johnson was going to be a top 10 pick on June 23rd, 2026. And yet both of those things are true.
It's incredible. Yes, this was a genuine curveball because the feeling was that Dallas was going to go Burries or Mara if Mara was available. And Mara was going to be available because I'd gotten some feedback earlier in the day that it was going to be Flemings almost definitely to Atlanta at 8 because they had gotten down to Flemings or Burries and they go with Flemings, a pick that I love as well. And then, so I'm bracing for like, okay, I don't think it'll be Burries, but I'm waiting on Mara. Will it be Mara? And maybe we'll, I hope we eventually get the story. Masai Ujiri and obviously everyone in that front office, they would have probably had their board just about done by the time Dusty May's hiring was official. But you did bring him in. And unquestionably, if there was any like, hey, are we shifting a few pieces in our top 8, 10, 12 right now? And Dusty May had enough to sway you one way or the other. I'm fascinated by the pick. He doesn't project to be this guy who's going to be like a multi-time all-star, but he also is like an ultimate role player, will do anything you ask of him, super coachable, like loves the physicality of the game. A guy that his teammates have raved about, wasn't the best player on Michigan's team last season, wasn't the second best player on Michigan's, but he's the first pick in this draft. And these are the Michigan Mavs, I guess, if you've got the Nova Knicks. It's the fact that he left Illinois and was part of this obviously highly acclaimed transfer class a year ago and gets into the top 10. And he's the only non-freshman in the top 10 as well. The fact that it was him, I just think it's a crazy story. And really cool one at that. A note from our research team here. There were 8 consecutive freshmen selected to start the draft. That was tied for the most in the modern era. We actually had 8 consecutive drafted a year ago. And then we'll talk to the other Michigan guys here, GP as well. But Michigan was the first program since Villanova in 2018 to win a title and in that same year send 3 players into the first round. And Michigan was also the first team in 19 years, follow me here, to have 3 lottery picks. But those 3 lottery picks, none of them were a freshman. Florida, when it won back-to-back championships, was actually the most recent team to do that. Michigan pulled it off. And in this lottery dominated by one-and-done players, understandably so, I just thought it was a perfect encapsulation of everything college basketball and the draft and the NBA and how all these forces and people meet. Like, you understand why guys went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in this draft, but there is still a place in the lottery for proven talents. Winning matters. Dusty, it just speaks so well of Michigan, Dusty May and his staff, that Merez and then Yaks, and then a die who might have slipped just a nidge, just a little bit. They all wind up being lottery picks nonetheless. And I don't know where their NBA careers are going to go from here, but at the very least, from the players era last November until Tuesday night in Brooklyn, New York, those three players, and there is just, it's the culmination of this phenomenal all-time story where like, you know, Lord willing, they will swap stories and share those tales when they reconvene again when they're in their 70s. I love everything about it.
There was a great quote from Yaxel, who went 11th to Golden State, then Adai Mar goes 12th to Oklahoma City. So three players go within four spots of each other, 9, 11, and 12. And Yaxel, talking about Dusty, he said, well, I guess we now know who his favorite player was. So whether that's true.
I love it.
It's just something that makes you smile. And I saw some stuff on Twitter, and then we'll move on, about they really reach and take a big swing on Mo Johnson because they hired the Michigan coach. Like, did they really just draft Mo Johnson because their new coach told them to? And I'm like, that's just so, I think, missing the point. You hire Dusty May independent of anything else because you believe that he's a bright star in the coaching profession. And if it took people a little too long to figure it out, well, that's on them, but it's in our face since the Final Four at FAU. Everything that happened at Michigan reinforces it. You hire Dusty May because of that, because you believe in him running your franchise. But once you hire him, or honestly, even in the process of hiring him, why wouldn't you talk to him about all of these guys and other players in the Big Ten? Anybody mm-hmm. knows anything about. He has been working in college basketball. And I don't think he has to tell you draft Mo Johnson, but I think he can tell you a lot of things about Moraz Johnson that gets you to a point to where you go, how can I not? Like, if I ran the Grizzlies, I wouldn't draft a player just because somebody told me. But if I ran the Grizzlies, after having a conversation about Kelvin Sampson about Kingston Flemings, I was ready for the Grizzlies to try to package 16 with future assets and move it to the top 10, try to take Atlanta's pick at 8 to go get Kingston Flemings. Not because Kelvin Sampson said, how well do you know Zach Kleiman? It's because after just listening to Kingston Flemings' college coach talk about him, I went, my God, I wouldn't mind having that. And yeah. I bet that's something similar to what happened here. They weren't drafting Moraz Johnson because Dusty May said do it. Dusty May talked to, he just probably answered questions about Moraz Johnson, had conversations about Moraz Johnson, and those conversations can move needles in different directions. And it's obvious to me that it moved that needle that way.
Unquestionably. And the semi-ironic thing about Rez, and then Josh, if you want to throw up those 11 to 20 picks, we can transition this just to Michigan and then move it along. The season ends, they win the title. He was always going to go in the draft. There genuinely was, I want to say, for like a 7-day period, just a little bit of like a, is there a chance he might come back because maybe he won't be projected as a top 25 pick and we've got a big NIL bag waiting for him here. Now, I want to be clear. I don't think that was ever like really, really, truly like a likelihood on the table. But by no means, I would say into early May, was Moraz Johnson Jr. thought to be like a top 12, maybe fringe lottery pick, depending on things broke. This dude went number 9. Incredible, incredible stuff. On the Michigan stuff, Yaxel going 11, but going to Golden State, that was kind of an open secret. They really did covet a lot of what he brought. The question was Golden State going to take a swing with the 11th pick with someone who's going to be 24 by the time the season starts next season? But for many obvious reasons, if you watched our HQ coverage, we spoke a lot about this. No, Golden State is almost certainly not going to win an NBA championship, not make the NBA finals, but it does want to make one more push to be, can we be a 6, a 5, a 4 seed next season in the winter of Steph Curry's career? Steve Kerr's got 2 years now left on this renewed coaching deal. Draymond Green is nearing the end as well. We need to bring someone in who is not a project, who's someone who can contribute right away. They get it with the Axel. I like that. And then for Adai Mara, just to wrap up the Michigan stuff with all this, he goes to the Thunder and is now the Thunder with Chet Holmgren. And like, Sorber doesn't get a lot of playtime, but another big there, and Hartenstein. And it just, I did not think like, if you told me he's going to be taken between 8 and 14, I literally think the last team I would have picked for him to go to would have been the Thunder at 12, but go there he will, and that'll just be super interesting to see how that all works out. What are your final thoughts on the Michigan men being, you know, 9, 11, and 12 and wrapping up a glorious season?
So we've talked about Mo Johnson. Let's focus on the other two for a second. Yaxel makes sense to me for all the obvious reasons. I know he's 23, about to be 24, but Golden State's best player is 38. When your best player is 38 and you're trying to maximize the end of his career, I don't really care if your rookie's 24 years old. So I'm fine with it. And I think Mike Dunleavy said something similar at a post-draft press conference. As for Mara, I'm actually not surprised that he's in Oklahoma City, because we all just watched the Western Conference Finals. Like, they had a Wimby problem. Now, maybe everybody does, except for the Knicks in that one series that one time. But Chet Holmgren, like, that might have just been a seven-game series that is not representative of Chet Wimby or Chet at all going forward, right? But that was – if I were working in Oklahoma City, that what I saw would have concerned me. He got spooked by Victor Wembanyama and was uncomfortable on the court in his presence. So that's one reason to maybe just be looking elsewhere, although I don't think you're trying to replace Chet Holmgren right now.
No.
But they do have other front court contract situations where they're going to have to keep remaking around the fringes on this roster over and over again. Mm-hmm. You're just not going to keep being able to draft, develop good players, and then re-sign them to big contracts. It's not allowed under the current CBA, or at least you pay real punishment for it. So they're going to have to cycle people out and cycle new people in. And among the new people I wouldn't mind cycling in is a guy who at the very least can look eye to eye with Wimby. You know, that's the thing you're dealing with for the next 5 to 10 years. And Adai Mara, at least physically, is the type of person that helps you maybe deal with that a little better.
I can easily talk myself into a situation where going to Oklahoma City is the best thing for him, because I'm not convinced he can be someone that's going to be like legitimately 82 game plus postseason impactful right away. Plus there was some of the stuff with like the conditioning on him that some teams had some questions on, and he can certainly be rationed when it gets to Oklahoma City. Let's keep it moving here, GP. Real quick on the Bucks, they got Burries at 10 and they get Ament at 13. There was some thought that maybe he would go at 10. Ament lands about where I thought he was going to. I'll just rattle off a few thoughts and you pick on whatever place you want to. So I'll just tick off all this stuff. Bucks, because of the Giannis trade, I tell you what, Burries and Ament, if they actually do wind up hitting, maybe Milwaukee could have something special there. Ament was thought to be, you know, potentially top six, top seven as recently as like January. And would just, he did not have the momentum there despite getting workouts with teams at 6 and 7, but it wasn't going to happen there. Steinbach and Christian Anderson go to Charlotte. If you watched HQ, you know, I had great things to say about that. Steinbach, he was off the radar. Washington wasn't good, but his measurables, how he projects to be just a plug-in, go clean up the trash, work the boards. And then Christian Anderson, I could well be wrong. I think he is going to be, he could play himself into a regularly starting role as a point guard eventually, but just a really nice shooting piece, playmaker, smart, doesn't try and do too much. Some really good stuff there with the Hornets. I liked a lot of what they did there as well. And then as you kind of tour through the rest of what we saw there in the teens, Swain to Chicago, I'm not huge on that. We'll see. Sturts was one of the biggest winners of the draft. Division II prospect, turns himself into a top 16 pick. And oh, by the way, he's going to the Thunder, a great place for him just to learn. I love that for him. The Pistons trade up at 17 to get a Corey. That was a very open secret. They were very into him. I think they were nervous that Toronto was going to take him at 19, so they move up to get him. Hell of a story. Hell of a story there. Hey, by no means was he thought to be a one and done player, and he was a top three scorer among all freshmen last season. Allen Graves goes to Toronto instead. And then Jaden Quaintance at 20. Mark Pope only had him available for 4 games, but he turned in a top 20 draft pick all the same. Mark Pope and John Calipari had the same number of first round draft picks on this night, folks. If you were unaware, take it wherever you want with those picks, basically 13 through 20, GP.
Well, let me just piggyback off of the Quaintance comment, because I love that pick. Not for everybody, but for San Antonio. I know they didn't win the title, but they are the favorite to win the 2027 NBA championship. I don't know if people are in tune with that, but the Spurs are officially in the betting markets the favorites to win the NBA championship in 2027. So they're set up. Like, they are already supposed to win the next title, even before this draft happened. So they can clearly afford to take a big swing like this, because what happens if they miss? You ready for this? What happens if Jaden Quaintance never plays in the NBA? the Spurs are still the favorite to win the 2027 NBA title. And if they do that, I'm sure they'll be the favorite in 28 too. So there's not a real need for them right now to absolutely add somebody that can help. I think the Warriors in the West needed to add somebody who could help. That's how they end up with Yaxel. I think the Spurs got all the people they need to win a championship. They're already in place. Now you're just trying to like make it unfair. And Quaitons could make it unfair. Mm-hmm. If he ever develops into what we all thought he could before his knee was wrecked, and who knows if he can. The reason he was available at 20 is because there's real questions about whether he can. But if he ever does, I mean, this guy looked like a future defensive player of the year. And so I don't want to get hyperbolic on draft night, although it's an easy place to do it. But this is not crazy to me. If Jaden Quince's knee heals fine and it's not an issue in his development or athleticism, explosiveness, all that stuff moving forward, you could look up and you can't score on San Antonio because Wimby's just roaming around, altering and just eliminating everything. And then when he checks out, here comes Jaden Quince to do the exact same thing. That's tough. So they get him, and I think most expect that he might not be able to play a big role or much of a, like, maybe not at all in his rookie season. Let's just rehab him and set him over here and let him get better in the dark. And then they come back later in the first round and grab Terrace Reed out of UConn, which is just, all right, you thought we were taking our backup center? Oh, no, no, no. With our 20th pick, we took the guy that we think could be an all-star level defensive center someday if he develops and heals. With this pick, we're taking the guy who can actually play in the front court for us next year as we are trying to win a championship with Victor Wembanyama. Victor Wembanyama, that is Terrace Reed out of UConn, who is a traditional center, a little older, but feels like plug and play in the NBA. And so the favorites to win the next NBA championship just added a plug and play big out of UConn. You know, I thought they had a great night.
Yeah, I had an executive text me mid-draft and basically say, like, we gave Quaitons a really good look. Like, he was in the general range here. But we don't think he's actually going to play next season. And if he does, it's going to be minimal. So we just weren't in a position where we were going to take a swing on that. And so them drafting Reed San Antonio makes all the more sense considering that. But if Quaitons does get healthy, get strong, and actually makes it work, and defensively, that team will be an absolute nightmare and truly could be among the greatest defensive teams in the history of the NBA. So that's
going to win an NBA title, game four, sweep, 75-71.
I know, it could be insane, man. That's the high end if it all hits there. Hey, what the hell, Josh? Why not? One more break and then we'll run through picks 21-30 before we get the hell out of here.
All right, Norlander, I want to end this by talking about some of the guys who passed on big paydays to stay in the draft. And maybe Wednesday will go well, but Thursday didn't. But before that, just any other thoughts on picks people actually selected in the 20s?
Yeah, just a couple of quick hitter thoughts here. Josh, if you'd be so kind, look at this. Great stuff. Great producing out of Josh. We appreciate you, buddy, staying up so late here on the East Coast with us. So, okay, actually, you know what? I'm going to volley this right back to you. Just real quick on this. We talked about this actually a little bit at length on the show. Memphis trades down twice. Drafts Kareem Lopez. He's from Mexico. He was actually the 21st pick. This is the first draft. Here's a wow for you. The first draft since 1995 were the first 20 picks. And 95 was all of them. It was all 30 first round picks. All first 20 picks were all college players, GP. And that speaks to, obviously, NIL. Yeah,
that's just what it is, right?
Without a doubt. But hey, kind of cool. Like a good night for college basketball overall. A good night for the Big 12. Had how many, GP? Did it have 12? First round picks, I think I saw.
I don't have the tally in front of me. I don't want to lie.
I got you real quick here. DeBonta, Peterson, Flemings, Burries, Anderson, Cam Carr, who slid, Sanak, who slid, Jefferson, Pete. So it had nine. It had nine. That's the most in the first round in the history of the conference. So good on the Big 12 and good on college. So the first top 20 picks were all college basketball players, which was a pretty good deal here. But I thought Memphis was going to take Anderson, and I know I wasn't alone in that thought. The Lopez thing feels a little bit of a project. You're kind of trying to squeeze him next to, I won't say explicitly next to Boozer, because Boozer's going to start. Lopez is not going to start there. But you're the Memphis guy. I just want to tee you up one more time on where you land on that, because it feels like I just don't know why they trade. I know why they traded out to get all these second-round assets and to pawn them off. But Lopez just, to me, seemed like a – a little too cute, as Josh just mentioned. I completely agree with the description there. Where do you land on that?
So for people who don't know exactly, the Grizzlies had the 16th pick. They traded down a spot to pick up 2 seconds, and then they traded down 4 more spots to 21 to pick up 3 more seconds. So they moved down 5 spots, gained 5 second-round picks, and selected Kareem Lopez at 21, first Mexican-born player to be selected in the first round of the NBA draft in history. So awesome, awesome deal there. Listen, as you know, I work for the Grizzlies. I'm born in Memphis, raised in the area. My kids wear Grizzlies jerseys every day, it feels like. I am hesitant to question Zach Kleiman, not because I work for the same organization, but because he is widely recognized as one of the best, if not the best, at selecting players on draft night. They've hit in the first round. They've moved up and hit. They've added Cam Spencer in the second round. G.G. Jackson, in the second round. Jalen Wells in the second round. Those are 3 rotation players for the Grizzlies that were all found in the second round. So this is a franchise that values second-round picks because they've shown the ability to get players with them. And also, second-round picks are always just like little deal sweeteners. If you want to move up 5 spots in a draft, just throw a second-round pick, throw 2 on. You can always get that done. So the more you have, the better to help you deal make moving forward. And all of that stuff is something that Kleiman is very good at. And the attention to detail is very, very, very sharp. So I guess I can say both of these things at the same time. If I were running the Grizzlies, is this what I would have done? No, I would have probably, when I see Christian Anderson still available, and I think I can move down a spot and pick up 2 second-round picks and still get him, I would have probably done that and walked out of here with Cameron Boozer, Christian Anderson, and 2 second-round picks and called it a night and introduced that, and the fan base would have been ecstatic. The fans I gather from social media and my friends back home are still ecstatic and excited. But I think if you said just this morning, option A is this, and option B is this, and option A is Boozer, Anderson, 2 seconds, option B is Boozer, Lopez, 5 seconds, I think the fan base would have probably, without knowing much about Kareem Lopez, wanted it to be Boozer and Anderson because they watched both of them play in college. And also, frankly, who do the fans listen to? It's people like me, and we have all been talking about Christian Anderson, and so they were just more, you know, ready for that. That said, again, Zach Kleiman knows what he's doing. He went to see Lopez in person. He has a track record that I'm happy to take a wait and see approach. They clearly like Lopez, prioritize him, and they've been better at doing this than most. It seems probably smart to just let it play out before you have any, big declarations. But no matter who I work for, I'll never lie. This might work, might be smart, but it's nitpicking. But it is not. It's not what I would have done if I would have been running the franchise. But I don't think I should be running a franchise, so I don't even know why that matters.
GPT, we want more of that. Grind City Media, Gary Parrish Show, Wednesday morning. He's got a lot of his A-block there. I'll tour you through the rest of the first round here, and then we can wrap up the show. Filon went 22 to Philly, which is kind of it's definitely a slide from where they thought he was going to go like a month ago, but in the past like 2 weeks, not a slide. This was really felt like his range there. Zubi Ejiofor was the highest drafted player who did not get a green room invite. Went 23 to the Hawks. I said this on HQ. I think even his camp was surprised. I think they thought that the Knicks, who at the time had the 24th pick, was the best case scenario. There was some trading with the Knicks and the Lakers. Lakers take Cam Carr, who definitely slid. I don't disagree with Cam Carr at 24 personally, but I think a lot of people thought Cam Carr was going somewhere like 17 to 20, and he goes to 24. Sergio De La Rea is going to the Knicks. He was the second international player taken. We talked about Terrace Reed. And then the final 4 picks here, Chris Anak at 27 went lower than I thought he would. He went to the best possible scenario, I think. I agree with Avery. He said this on HQ, and then we had to move on, so we didn't get to kind of expound on the point. I completely agree with what Avery Johnson said on the show. Chris Anak should have returned to Houston. He would have gotten better. he would have been paid a ton, been paid, I was told, at least $4 million they could have made work for him. And although nothing is guaranteed, I think it is more likely than not that had he returned in a weaker draft class, Sanak would have been a top 15 pick a year from now, would have made more money. Don't know if the situation would have been better. He's going to play with Boston, and I think that's a wonderful situation for him overall. Keep it moving along here. Caravan. Justin Jefferson goes to the Nets. I love the pick. I've said plenty on the show. I think that's awesome, and I think he's going to stick. So I love to see that. Caravan going 29, and the Kings moving up to get him is an incredible moment. This is a player who had a guaranteed two-year offer from the Warriors 2 years ago, walked away from that. It would have been a second-round selection. Went back to UConn, turned in an all. The fact that he got a first-round guaranteed deal after an incredible college career, 4 years, thrilled for Alex Caravan. He deserves every bit of it. That's really, really awesome. And then we can kind of segue into this. Koa Pete lasted until 30th. I didn't think he would be waiting that long. Going into the night, I thought he would be off. I thought someone would take him off the board. The Lakers were 25. I didn't think he'd go past the Lakers. At that point, they had the 25th pick. They wound up with the 24th after the trade. So he goes 30th. The good is that he stays home. He's going to play for the Suns. He's grew up in Arizona. There's a lot of good with that. The bad is that, you know, that could not have been remotely fun for a good hour and a half as they waited to see. And, you know, I had someone hit me late on Tuesday night that, you know, basically said, like, this, he just miscalculated. Like, it's plain as day. Everyone knows it. He would have been paid $5 million to return to Arizona. Didn't want to do it. And one day, what this person said was, like, one day he's probably going to realize that, that, and this was their exact words in the text. It was like, quote, one day, that clutch tricked off millions for him. And they did. He cost himself millions and millions of dollars. Now, he is a first round pick at the end of the day. And I think the situation he's going to is probably a good thing, but at least he got picked barely in the first round, where there were a few guys, including Isaiah Evans, the only green room invitee, who is going to be sitting there waiting to be hear his name called on day two.
On Koa, like, it ends up awesome, if only because he didn't have to go to bed tonight wondering what tomorrow's going to look like. And I really do mean that. Like, he'd have been fine, but
yeah,
it would have been a hard night for me to just put my head on the pillow and wonder what tomorrow's going to look like. I'd have shut my phone off probably. And so at least now it's done and he gets to go home to Phoenix. All of that is great. But, and I understand the point you're making, like, he made a miscalculation. But I would just argue that's maybe not the right word, because, like, I think he just was stubborn to a fault. Like, what was the miscalculation that he made? The whole world told him what was probably going to happen, including me. Like, yeah. You, like, hey, do whatever you want, but you stay in this draft, and it's probably not going to go the way you thought it was going to go when you were a McDonald's All-American USA Basketball entering your freshman season. But the way your freshman season unfolded, the way the combine unfolded, you're going to get picked closer to 30 than 15. And it could be 31 or later. Meantime, there's like $5 million waiting on you at Arizona. This was all the calculation. There's $5 million for you at Arizona to be the best player in the Big 12 on a preseason top 10 team. Or, buddy, good luck. And he chose to walk through the door of uncertainty. And his now base salary next year will be $3 million. So, like, his problems are smaller than most of ours. But I still think he was just stubborn to a fault. He is an example of somebody who decided a while ago they're going to spend 1 year in college and only 1 year in college. And that's fine. But he left millions of dollars on the table that might not hurt him long term, because he's going to make more money than most people, regardless of if he ever develops a jump shot. He's already set to do that. But in the short term, and possibly in the long term, he did leave actual millions of dollars on the table. And I hope next year's crop of prospects that are talked about and projected where he is and the way he was discussed are a little, I don't know, less stubborn about it. I'll just go back to that word. My advice, and I said this on HQ tonight, genuinely, my advice to basically everybody projected outside of the top 10, I would enter the draft and also enter the transfer portal immediately at the end, as soon as I could. I'm entering the draft and I'm entering the transfer portal. Then go through the entire process and know that if you want to stay in the draft, you can. But if you are somebody like Koa Pete, Henry Vassar, Malik Thomas, Isaiah Evans, if you enter the draft and enter the transfer portal at the same place, and I say that intentionally, if you don't enter the transfer portal, you really are only negotiating with one school then if you decide to withdraw from the draft. I would want everybody with money to know that I'm available in theory, even if I plan to go back to my former school, but I want to get the bidding war going. And so go through the process, get in the transfer portal, and then when it's all done on the last day to make a decision, actually find out what college offers are out there for you and then weigh them against the realistic way the first night of the draft could unfold. And if Koa Pete would have done that, he'd be a wealthier man today. He's a wealthy man anyway, but he would have more money today than he has if he'd have just done what I explained and actually followed through on the thing that is most financially beneficial. Now, period, new paragraph.
Yeah.
If you just want to be in the NBA, no matter what it looks like, you're just tired of school, no matter what that looks like, that's fine. And I gather that's true with some of these other people. They just, no matter what happens, hey, GP, I hear every word you're saying, and I also understand it. I just don't care. I don't want to go back to college. That's fine. But for players to understand it and still just walk through that door and be like, man, I don't know what happened. Bro, we all tried to tell you what would happen. We laid this out for you, and now here you are.
Yeah, and so the three players that were notable that didn't get taken, Henry Vassar out of Carolina, who definitely was talked into, and maybe he had the belief, and has the right to believe it, but it didn't come true, that he was going to be able to be taken somewhere in the final few picks of the first round and be a first-round draft pick. He's waiting to hear his name called and should go really early, like top three picks on Wednesday. You've got Malik Thomas, who was always going to be in this like 27 to 34 range. I'm not surprised he didn't get taken. The Knicks have the first pick. Calipari, who, by the way, with Acuff getting drafted, Calipari surpassed Mike Krzyzewski. Acuff is the 30th lottery pick that Calis had. K had 29. It's just out of 59 draft lottery picks between those two is crazy. John Calipari has longtime friends that work for the Knicks in their executive vice president, Leon Rose, a former agent, and then Worldwide West. So I wonder if Malik Thomas will be first off the board. And then there's Isaiah Evans, who I didn't personally have a first round grade on. He was the only person not taken that was in the green room. Sometimes you check in with some of these teams and you just try and get a decent, you know, by giving them the benefit of like it being on background, and you're not going to get all the answers, and I never try and pry too much. It just felt like there were too many teams that didn't have a first-round grade on Evans that this potentially was out there. He was always going to go from Duke. There was a lot of a numbers game there. I get why he left. He's just in a spot here where teams just put a second-round grade on him, or at least more teams than not. My last thing, and then you can wrap if you want, GP. There's too many damn people in the green room. I understand why we're doing this. You want to give as many players and their families as great of a moment as possible. I get why. Like, you saw the television coverage. They got, you know, the drone camera, whatever, from above, and it's never been bigger. You now got these 8-foot tables, that, like the things that are they lay out for the buffets at the weddings and all that. I get it. But the more people you invite, the better the chance you're going to have a situation like this, which nobody wants. Duke had to deal with this a couple years ago with Filipowski. Top it off at like, I don't know, 18. You got to figure if you've got 18 guys coming, it's probably likely that the intel is going to be great. And guys 17 and 18 are not going to be sitting there at 29 and 30 almost always. I would even say 15 and make it truly special. But I understand they want to get as many as possible. They don't need 20 plus guys in the green room because now you got this. Now you got Isaiah Evans not being able to be taken, and now he's got to go through this again. It's not fun. It's honestly, on some level, it's embarrassing because you're trying to get the intel from the NBA is trying to get the intel from teams who are the guys that we have high degrees of confidence on. They're going to be taken on the first night of the draft in the first round, and everyone that gets invited to the green room then gets to take the tour and go through the 2 hours of publicity backstage. It's an awesome experience. I've seen it up close plenty of times. Isaiah Evans didn't get that, and the reason why he didn't get it was because there was a miscalculation because the NBA invites too many of these guys to the green room. And so as a result, you've got these unfortunate stories. I don't know if they'll ever change it. I just think they should rein it in just a little bit more because every year they're trying to, they seem to try and one up. You were live on the set at the top of the show, GP, and I wasn't because I had my hit later. But right at the start of ESPN's coverage, like, and this wasn't ESPN, this was the NBA at the Barclays Center, like the production elements to start this you would have thought that AJ DeBonsa, Cam Boozer, Caleb Williams, Darren Peterson were beamed down from the heavens and were about to rebirth the NBA as we, it was a little bit over the top. So I get why they're trying to make it as grand as possible, but there are some elements that I think they need to take a little more time in so that we can avoid these embarrassing plot twists. And so Isaiah Evans, I think he'll be taken somewhere in the top five picks tomorrow. I'd be surprised if that's not the case, but many didn't think he'd be a second round pick. And so now he's got to sleep on this, unfortunately. And, he's got good money coming to him. He's lived a nice life, but he didn't need to go through this.
As I listen to you talk, is this going to be a thing in Chicago? Caleb Wilson, Caleb Williams, like.
Oh yeah, did I say Caleb Williams?
I think so.
It's going to happen, especially me, the Bears fan. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to be a thing. Yes,
they don't even really live in my world, either of them, except for Williams with the draft. But like, I get it messed. I mess it up all the time.
Yeah.
Like, just in my own head, I'm like, which one's going to be,
especially in the Bulls and Bears. Oh, yeah, unavoidable.
On the green room thing, I completely agree. And I actually think this is a place where, I don't know, sometimes I struggle with this because I care about this kind of stuff more than most. And I realize just other people don't care.
Yeah. We did the whole hat thing a year ago. We don't need to redo that again, like on this podcast.
Yeah, no. I don't even mean that. I know, but
that's also stupidity. We need to fix it. Everyone says it every year, and they still can't fix it. Go ahead.
Yeah. To that point, the hats, the real-time trades. Like, my wife was trying to be a supportive wife and watch the draft, and she was in a group text with her friends, like, and they're all trying to – because it was a big night in Memphis. Like, Memphians were genuinely excited. And she, like, texted me at one point, and she was like, we don't know what's happening. Who do the Grizzlies have? Like, there was a time, I don't think I told you that.
For about 17 seconds near the end of the show, we were like, wait, did Koa Pete actually get drafted?
So
is
there was a moment
wrong.
So there was a moment where at FedEx Forum, they announced, nobody knows what's going on. So all fans know is that at 16, the Grizzlies are picking. So then they're like, with the 16th pick, the Memphis Grizzlies select Bennett Sturts. FedEx Forum explodes. Woohoo! We got our future point guard to go with Cameron Boozer. And it's like, no, we don't have Bennett Sturts. We traded down a spot. It's like, all right, let's go. With the 17th pick, Ibuka Okori, and FedEx Forum exploded again. And they were like, yeah. And it was like, no, he's not ours. So like, nobody knows what the hell's going on. We got to a point. We're like... We do this for a living. And it's like,
Koa Pete thing was a wild moment on set. We were just like, what?
What
the bleep is happening right now? It felt like we were being incepted in real time. I didn't know what was going on.
So just for just some inside baseball on television, like there's cameras everywhere and there's often cameras like full shots of the desk, but then somebody will start talking and it'll go to a solo shot. And that's when you can text or look at something up or whatever. And so I'm watching this unfold on Twitter and I'm seeing Akeem Darmish and like, we're trying to get through it. And I recognize in real time, there is a trade happening and there is no way he knows what it is, but I'm reading it on Twitter. And I'm like, okay, like I can just do a little finger up, like, hey, and he'll see it out of the corner of his eye and he'll come to me. And then I can be like, now, hey, Akeem, we got a trade. And like, and in my head, I was like, I'll just run him through it real quick. I'll just host for a second. And I started and I was like, bro, I don't even understand what's going on. I can't read this and compute it quickly enough to get it to him in real time. So I was just like, hey, you're the host, buddy. You figure it out.
And then Avery Johnson was, what did he say? He said, is he going to be playing with Devin Booker or not? And we were like, we think that's the case.
We think so, Avery, but we'll see. So yes, it's all stupid and confusing. I really don't know why. This league is just always confusing. Like the CBA is, if I say the second apron is one of the most important things in the NBA. But if I say second apron to my neighbor, he will look at me like what? The lottery odds. Nobody ever understands that. My kids are constantly like, hey, Dad, when are the Grizzlies picking? Buddy, I don't know. We'll find out on Mother's Day. Well, how do they figure it out? They're trying to change it. I'll tell you later when you get older. You still like, so it's just the whole thing can be confusing. That's not what I meant, though. Here's what I meant. Because this stuff just weighs on me. And I recognize other people just let it roll right off of them. And so I need to understand that. I'm better at understanding it at this age than I was at a younger age. But like, I'm not joking. If I were Isaiah Evans or Isaiah Evans' father, I would not have allowed that to happen. I would have just said, I'm not going. I appreciate the invitation, but no matter how good of a moment that could be, if I'm taken 23rd and everybody's there, the only thing I can't get out of my head is that it will be awful if I'm sitting there by myself at the end, and I don't want to do that. And I would try to protect my son from that experience. And if I were a player, I think I would try to protect myself from that experience. But I also understand not everybody is that worried about those types of things, but I get sad every time I see that. These young people, and I mean this sincerely, we'll get back to joking around in a minute, but these young people, this is a dream night for them. You look forward to this. You probably have looked in a mirror at some point and said, with the first pick in the NBA draft, the so-and-so select me, right? This is supposed to be that night for you. And then you're just sitting there and there's a camera in your face and everybody's asking, what's wrong? What happened? Why not you? And it goes from being the thing you dreamt about to an absolute nightmare. Now, let me be clear. He's going to wake up tomorrow. We're going to start doing this again. He's going to get picked pretty quick. And then he's going to get a contract and a uniform. He's going to go to Vegas and everything's going to be okay, I think. But what was supposed to be a special night turns into a nightmare. And I guess it would have been depressing on some level, even if it had been at your home by yourself with your friends and family and just that.
Yeah.
But at least you don't have to have it exposed to the whole world. In other words, I might say 20 seconds. So on the end of this podcast, so who's best available tomorrow? You think Isaiah Evan goes? But because of the way it happened and those cameras are in his face and he's by himself, then it's a bigger story than it otherwise would be. And it's a sad one. I would love to avoid these. If I could change two things about the draft, let's get the hats on the right people in real time and let's cut down that green room so that I don't want to make it about me, but so we don't have to, I was going to say, so I don't have to watch that anymore, but really it's not fun to watch. I don't want to watch that anymore. It's just, it's sad. It's if that were my son, I my heart would be broken for him. And I would look in the mirror tonight and go, why did I not step in and keep my son from that public moment? I know it's not as big of a deal as I'm making it sound right now, but that is how big of a deal it is in my head.
Last thing, and let's wrap. Let's get out of here. I'm going to say a name. You're going to tell me if they have a chance to be the best player in this draft. Okay.
Yeah.
AJ DeBonta.
Yes, of course.
Darren Peterson.
Definitely.
Cameron Boozer.
Of course.
Caleb Wilson.
Yes, I think he has a chance. Sure. It's not zero.
Keaton Wagler.
I mean, I'm hesitant to say no on any of the top five.
Yes or no?
On Wagner, I'll just say no. I don't think he'll be the best.
Mychal Brown Jr.
No.
Darius Acuff.
Maybe.
You can say yes.
I can. It's not zero. It's not zero. It would sound stupid to say the guy who just did something in one of the best basketball leagues in the country that hadn't been done since Pete Maravich has no chance to be the best player from this draft, even though he's maybe the best college guard John Calipari's ever coached. I'm not comfortable saying that on camera. I don't think Darius Acuff Jr. is going to be the best player in this draft. If I thought that, I would have said take him number one. But I am not ruling it out. Ruling it out.
Kingston Flemings?
No, the list stops right there, I think.
List stops there.
I think if you told me,
there's an unknown percentage that it'll be someone else could do it. I don't think it'll be Braden Burries. Yaxel Lendenborg is one of the five best players now. He probably won't be, but dude was awesome. But it's probably not going to be someone else. But the range and variety on it is as deep as ever.
I will say this: it's something you've said before, and I'll just echo it. We both would have taken AJ DeBonta number one. If you told both of us right now to predict, you can only say one name, who's going to be the best player from this draft, what name would you say?
I would say it's DeBonta, but
I would too.
But the more likely scenario is that will be someone else.
That's what I agree. I agree with that. This is very much like, would you take this awesome college basketball team in the NCAA tournament or the field?
Yeah.
I would take the field. And in this, as much as I love DeBonta as a prospect, would have absolutely taken him number one too. I just think the field would be the proper bet just based on
easily
because there's so many guys, I think at least five, who have a chance to be real franchise superstars, Hall of Famers, And he's one of them, and he's at the top of the list. But those other guys are real candidates, too.
It's 2 a.m., and that's a show.
That is a show. Shouts to Devin Downey.
I got to drive you back to your hotel, don't I?
I would really appreciate
it.
Yeah,
I'm going to do that for you, buddy.
This is not the first time I've tried to get an Uber in Stamford, Connecticut at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
I really think, when were we here? When were we here last time? Draft? No, besides the draft. Yeah. When were we here last time?
No, you were Elite Eight, maybe? Something like that. We were here during the tournament.
The Sunday of the Elite Eight. And it was about like this, and it was like 30 minutes to get an Uber. So how about
I got you covered, buddy. I'm not even kidding right now. I want to get out of here. I got to drive home. You're going to end the show. I'm leaving the show. You can solo. I'm going to pick. He's a floor below me. He's going to wrap the show. I'll see you in about 2.5 minutes, buddy.
All right. I'll see you downstairs, Matt Norlander. It's only a 7 minutes. It's 7 minutes out of his way. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. Devin Downey, Chester, South Carolina. Terry Teagle, he's a legend. Hook, Larnell, Hormuz. That whole movie thing, man. That's something else. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere. Subscribe to podcasts like Apple and Spotify. There's more of us than there are of them. That needs to be reflected in the comments. So do that, and we will talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
Paramount Podcasts.